Bloomberg Law with June Grosso. On demand or via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
The documentary Crude is about the epic legal battle over oil pollution of the Ecuadorian rainforest.
What was once paradise now has just been left in destruction.
The total area in which Texaco polluted is about the size of the state of Rhode Island. We are suing for environmental cleanup.
The plaintiff's accusation is just false. When you look at the science, they cannot really prove their case.
The fact we're having a trial is a miracle. It's a huge victory.
Just having a trial may have been a huge victory for the 30,000 Ecuadorian plaintiffs, and certainly did lead to a more than $18 billion verdict against Chevron for contamination of the Amazonian rainforest. But the 20 years of litigation are far from over. Chevron has vowed it will never pay a dime of the judgment, which is now more than $19 billion. The oil giant is now using more than 2,000 lawyers and other legal professionals from 60 law firms. It submitted 6 million pages of discovery documents, a 15,000-page privilege log, and 224 filings to fend off the environmental judgment obtained a little more than a year ago. That's according to a letter filed by the plaintiffs in New York federal court, just one of the jurisdictions in several countries where this case is being litigated. My guest is Fordham Law School professor Howard Erickson, who teaches complex litigation. Have you seen a litigation that is this complex and that has lasted this long?
I've seen other mass litigation that's bigger than the Chevron Ecuador litigation. For instance, the tobacco litigation, the asbestos litigation, Fen-Phen, and so on. Those are more massive. But for what is basically a single dispute, the Chevron Ecuador litigation is unbelievable. It's been going on 20 years with dozens of opinions from courts in different countries and just the number of different fights going on at the same time within this one dispute. It's really quite astonishing.
This litigation seems to have created a legal industry in itself. Is Chevron dragging out the litigation to stall paying the judgment?
What made this litigation get so crazy is not the underlying dispute. There's a serious underlying environmental dispute here, but what made this one so crazy is the course the litigation took when the Ecuador court entered a judgment of $18 billion or so, and Chevron chose to resist that judgment rather than paying it. The defendants in this case have bitterly disputed the underlying charges of environmental wrongdoing. They have disputed the charges that whatever environmental harm there may have been has caused any medical harm. So every aspect of this is disputed. But all of that kind of fades into the background when you look at the disputes over the charges of fraud and corruption in the way the Ecuadorian judgment was obtained.
What is Chevron charging that the Ecuadorians did as far as the first trial?
Chevron has accused the plaintiff's lawyers of obtaining the Ecuadorian judgment through corruption and bribery and fraud. In particular, they've charged the plaintiff's lawyers with ghostwriting the judge's opinion, with working closely with the supposedly court-appointed, supposedly independent expert who provided information to the Ecuadorian court, and most recently presented a declaration from a former Ecuadorian judge saying that there was actual bribery involved.
Tell me about the allegations of ghostwriting opinions.
When a court appoints an independent expert to advise the court on information concerning the claim, it's very important that that expert, in fact, be independent. The evidence that the court-appointed expert in the Ecuadorian case was working closely with the plaintiffs is actually quite troubling.
There's a lot of discussion and a lot of numbers being thrown out about the amount of money that Chevron is spending on lawyers.
The plaintiffs submitted a letter recently to the court in connection with a plaintiff request to slow down the process in New York because they are out-resourced. They feel overwhelmed by the asymmetrical resources and that they can't keep up with Chevron's pace and that they need to be cut a break in terms of meeting the judge's strict deadlines. In that letter, plaintiffs are estimating that Chevron has spent $2 billion on this litigation. In the New Yorker piece by Patrick Keefe, he estimated that Chevron was spending over $100 million on legal fees each year. More recent journalism by Michael Goldhaber suggests that they may be spending even more than that. Frankly, whatever the exact number, it is certainly in the hundreds of millions of dollars, at least, that Chevron has spent on this litigation over 20 years. And that is a mind-blowing amount for a litigation like this that really is about a single environmental dispute. Maybe the saddest thing about the sheer size of the legal expenses in this case is that, according to one report, there was a settlement offer many years ago where the plaintiffs offered to settle this dispute early on for $140 million. And Texaco at the time declined to pay that because they were on the eve of a merger with Chevron. To think that this case could have been resolved for that amount of money, in light of how many years of litigation we've now seen and how much has been spent on both sides, is really something.
Chevron's legal fees may be another source of problems for the Ecuadorians. Tell me about the RICO statute and legal damages.
Chevron's legal fees and costs play into this litigation in several ways. One is that the plaintiff's lawyers have said they are just out-resourced in this case and have said so to the court. Another is that the legal damages that Chevron is seeking from the plaintiffs and their lawyers on charges of fraud and on charges of violation of the RICO statute, those damages could include legal fees that Chevron has been spending. And finally, Chevron could recover legal fees in international arbitration.
Have the plaintiffs had any success trying to collect the judgment?
The plaintiffs received an $18 billion judgment from the Ecuadorian court back in 2011 and have now been trying to enforce that judgment elsewhere because Chevron doesn't have assets in Ecuador from which the judgment could be paid. It's quite clear that it's going to be difficult to enforce the judgment in New York because Judge Kaplan in the federal court in New York has made it quite clear that he thinks the judgment was obtained by fraud and corruption. But the plaintiffs have been seeking to enforce the judgment elsewhere, including Canada, Argentina, Brazil, and Argentina at least froze some of Chevron's assets. So there's movement afoot in other countries where the plaintiffs are trying to enforce this massive judgment.
Often the first strategy in a case is where to file it. What happened here?
The irony in this case is unbelievable because a group of Ecuadorian plaintiffs originally filed this case in federal court in New York. They wanted to be in the United States because the U.S. is often considered more advantageous for plaintiffs, but also they didn't trust the Ecuadorian legal system. The plaintiffs' lawyers were worried that oil companies would have too much influence in Ecuador, so the plaintiffs really wanted to bring this case in the United States. Well, Texaco, the defendant at the time, moved to dismiss on grounds of forum nonconvenience. In other words, Texaco said, this case really doesn't belong in the United States, it belongs in Ecuador. And Texaco made the argument that Ecuador would be just fine as a forum, notwithstanding the plaintiff's concerns. So the U.S. court dismissed the case. The plaintiffs refiled the litigation in Ecuador, and then the plaintiffs got their massive judgment, and all of a sudden the positions flipped. Because, of course, at that point, the plaintiffs were trying to enforce the Ecuadorian judgment, and the defendants have now spent years trying to prove that the Ecuadorian judgment was obtained by fraud and corruption, and that the Ecuadorian courts should not be trusted. One lesson to learn from this case is that forum selection is not as obvious as some people think. Defendants' lawyers are very quick to seek dismissal from the United States and try to shift litigation to other countries that defendants think will be less friendly to plaintiffs. But this litigation shows you, you've got to be careful what you wish for. The defendants wanted this case to be in Ecuador rather than the United States, and when it got there, the defendants got hit pretty bad. Another lesson from this litigation is that we have to deal with the fact that we're in a world of transnational disputes, but still largely a world of national legal systems. And a case like this, where we have the case bouncing around from U.S. courts to Ecuadorian courts to Argentinian courts, doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to try to resolve what are truly global disputes involving multinational corporations in what are still largely national legal systems.
Are international disputes necessarily more complex?
everything becomes exponentially more complex. There are questions of choice of law, questions of which forum has jurisdiction, questions of whether a judgment from one place can be enforced in another, questions of whether you can get discovery in another country for litigation in a first country. Every single piece becomes more difficult when you put something into the international context.
What does this case show about litigation?
This litigation shows just how messy litigation can get. This is the extreme case of messy, bitterly fought litigation. It's been going 20 years, shows no sign of stopping. Virtually every issue along the way has been fought bitterly by both sides. The underlying dispute about alleged environmental harm is sad enough, but when you look at the way the litigation has been fought, it's hard not to feel, once you get past the sense of something funny about the farce of it all, it's hard not to feel really sad at the drain of resources involved in litigation that goes on this long and is so hard fought.
That's Howard Erickson. For more on international law, go to BloombergLaw.com.
June Grosso is an attorney and communications consultant. This is Bloomberg Radio.
You can listen to Bloomberg Law Saturdays at 7 a.m., 12 p.m., 5 p.m., and 10 p.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.